This is Talk Star Wars, the official podcast of talkstarwars.co.uk. Hello everyone, welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Mark.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Paul.
And there's no Steve this week, he's on the Skype again.
He's so naked, he's not even here.
Yeah, he's actually stripped away his visibility this week. Yeah.
Well, he went to vote and he forgot to put a shirt on.
And so. He's joined a cat nation, he's currently saving them.
That's who he voted for, cats.
Sounds like the most adorable nation ever.
If I wake up tomorrow and there's a cat in number 10, I'll be most displeased with Mr. Ware. Because you know that'll be his fault.
Well, isn't there always one?
Not as the actual Prime Minister.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not usually one.
I'd have voted for the cat.
Any sort of policy power.
I'd have voted for the cat. No problem.
Might have been the best option.
To be fair, that would do well with the internet vote.
Yeah, well, we'd get a lot of views on YouTube, wouldn't he?
But no, I mean, just in terms of people on the internet would probably respond well to that. It's a good demographic.
Yeah, hell of a hashtag, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Probably start with a P. That would get a lot of clicks, wouldn't it? Okay, before we get started this week, we've got to say a couple of thank yous. So thanks to Adam Ryan Masood, who became a VIP last week, you'll remember, and liked our Facebook page this week.
Good job, also thanks
to Brandon Batt for answering the call that I put out to the VIPs to submit recordings of the Talk Star Wars intro, because I want to change the intro up and make it listener only, rather than have my dulcet tones all the way through it. I'm going to cut up the listeners, splice them together, and have them do the intro. So Brandon sent his through. Thank you. If you haven't done that already, email me your MP3 when you get a second. That would be brilliant. And that takes us swift. There's not a lot going on at the top of this episode, but we do have one 5-star review this week. Would someone like to read this one?
I'm zooming in. Hang on.
it's me after all. Pretty snug.
Teeny print. All right,
this is wonderful. I'm really looking forward to this.
I've got to be honest.
Hang on, Paul.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you can take advantage of our Ron Burgundy policy. That means whatever you write in a 5-star review, like this one, I will read, or one of my colleagues will read that for you verbatim. So if you want to promote your podcast or your blog, this is where to do it. There's only one rule, keep it clean, but apparently you don't have to make any sense whatsoever.
It doesn't have to be comprehensible, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many takes do I get?
As many as you need, mate, as many as you need. We'll just keep rolling.
Right. I'm going to try and pronounce the name exactly verbatim.
Yeah.
Best I can. Okie dokie. All right, here we go then. Right, a great podcast, 5-star. Thank you very much. By Ajajajajajajajajajajajajajaj. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okie dokie. Well, anyway, thanks for this. A great podcast. Occasionally, they can pleasantly bum-fuzzle the listener. They sit cattywampus to other doozy Star Wars podcasts due to their piquant testiculations and poignant slag wormerisms. Each week blooms a saucy pressing of mystery to pop your gas pipes. Slap it on the nips with your mangy skillet and moist it up to the home splice. Ciao!
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Zeus, for leaving us a 5-star review this week.
Indeed, yes. Yeah.
I think we probably know who's responsible for that one.
I should be able to tell you in a moment.
I
know exactly who that
is. It's somebody with only 2 keys on their keyboard.
It's certainly a key in that name.
Presumably they wrote the actual review first and then went back and put the title in. And by that time, with all the Dr. Zeusisms, they'd broken all but the A and J key.
Yeah, well, quite so.
Okay, right.
The slang wangerisms is really cool.
Slang wangerisms.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you very much. Yeah, and ciao to you too.
Deliriously inventive. Thank you very much. Keep them coming. We'll have more of them. So, listener comms this week, send your questions and comments to us via Twitter or Facebook, or you can send us an email and attach an MP3 and we'll use it as a voicemail to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. Our first email comes from Rob Williams, our friend over at the Generation X-Wing podcast.
Man.
He says, hey guys, just listening to your recent episode and Rob's discussion of how to end Leia's story. I was right with him on them meeting, but not in person. Leia dying, but not off screen. I think we're all on board with that, absolutely. One fan fiction I wrote, and I don't like doing this because it tarnished my enjoyment of Rogue One, was having Luke and Leia's reunion via hologram or holo chat. They chat, share, say their last words, and their moment will end much like it first began, with a message about hope and Leia being cut off quickly, a la A New Hope. It gives closure to the relationship. It's tragic and respectful, and respectfully writes off Leia. Just a thought. Anyways, all the best. Long live the Commonwealth. Rob from GXW. So how's this sound, building on your excellent suggestion from last week, Rob, that we might see an echo of Leia and Luke's first semi-interaction, because it was a bit one-sided, from A New Hope, with them communicating via hologram instead of by a connective tunnel? What do you make of that?
I kind of like the dramatic element of it, the symmetry. I don't know if I'd be as happy with it as my original vision.
Yeah.
yeah, I think that's just, you know.
It's a great idea if they were to fall back on the reuse of material. If they couldn't actually get this filmed.
Yeah.
If they couldn't get your version filmed, if that wasn't part of the original vision, and they wanted to perhaps say goodbye to Leia in the first act of episode 9, and they reuse some footage. I know there's a lot of claims being made at the moment about what is and isn't going to be done.
Yeah.
But this a hologram would be a lot easier to recreate digitally with existing footage than anything else, really. So it could be a nice escape pod for them.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the discussion group we're in the midst of, but what do you think of this suggestion?
I've got to be honest. The idea—it's like you say—the first time they—I'm doing quotes. You obviously can't see it, but they met. Like you say, was Luke staring at a little girl on the floor being projected from R2?
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we see her staring at a projection from R2, looking at him, has got something attached to it, hasn't it?
Mm.
It really does. I mean, I don't know if that'll be the situation, because it appears right now, I mean, R2 is on Arc 2, if you like. So, but I do like that sort of long-term yin-yang situation that's gone on over the years. But in all honesty, I do want them to be, you know, kind of like the whole holding hands. If there has to be any kind of farewell, then I'd rather they had some kind of physicality to it, to be honest.
Yeah,
but yeah, the idea of a role reversal as far as like a holographic projection is concerned is also really seriously awesome.
Yeah, it does. It is that dramatic symmetry, isn't it? It is the echo of what went before very Star Wars.
The attaching elements, though, to Carrie Fisher now, if there is any kind of situation where there's a bit more physicality involved, it would be a lot more stirring from a, you know, from the viewer's situation, I think. But they couldn't have gauged that, because obviously they didn't know what was going to happen.
No, of course not.
So it's highly unlikely they've gone down that route, because we know they've had to replan and stuff. So obviously they've gone down that route.
Well,
it's really hard to see how this is going to unfold.
It's tough, isn't it? Because, you know, there's a lot of discussions with this going on Twitter with members of the Commonwealth and listeners and people like that. And we just don't know. You know, we talk about like, oh, we can't, you know, it's not going to be their original plan, and it's not going to be their original intent for her. But at the same time, one, they hadn't written episode 9 because they went on record as saying that. They didn't have a story for episode 9 at this point. And two, if there's one franchise, possibly Harry Potter, but if there's one other franchise where leaving the mortal coil is not an obstacle to being prominently featured, it's Star Wars. So there's no reason why the plan they had for her didn't involve, you know, coming back in some sort of spiritual kind of non-corporeal form in the next film already before, you know, it's been filmed. We know this.
Yeah, and they even started teasing it in the Poe comic, didn't they?
Yeah, and they didn't need the reshoots with her because they were convinced that they've got everything they need.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're good in that respect.
That was one of the earliest statements about Carrie's involvement with 8, wasn't it? That she was the exact wording was that she was absolutely wrapped on Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So she was done and dusted with her story responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I'm I like Rob's suggestion. I like the dramatic symmetry of it, but I would much rather see them interact in person. This week's the cover art of this week's show is Mark and Carrie embracing in costume from the Vanity Fair shoot.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's just a gorgeous image, and that's what I'm so desperate to see in a Star Wars movie now.
But it's made all the more powerful because of Carrie now. So
it is, and there's a poignancy to that one image because we know we're not going to get Harrison Ford with them.
No, in character, true.
Because we've lost Han in the story, and we've lost Carrie in real life. So our holy trinity of Star Wars characters are gone.
Yeah.
So if we can just get a little tiny little sliver of it in The Last Jedi, and just have that physical meeting of the Skywalker twins on screen,
yeah,
I'll be happy.
Well, we know there's a funeral.
Do we?
But it spilled. Didn't
she kind of leaked something at Celebration last year. Didn't
she? I'm convinced it was filmed, or something's been filmed, and I can't see. Once he knows, once he gets word, we don't know whether that's going to be early in the film, middle of the film, end of the film. We have no idea. So no. I'm thinking we might see both of them paying last respects to Han.
Yeah, I mean, it will be because we pick up immediately after The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. So Rey and Luke's story picks up immediately. So getting that funeral to take place in the first act and have Luke there will be difficult because we know that she starts training with Luke, doesn't she? So you can assume that at least the first act of the movie, they're going to be on Ark 2.
Mm.
So getting a funeral for Han in the first act and having Carrie and Mark or Luke and Leia reunite is going to be difficult because of the Ark 2 section of the story.
Yeah. Oh,
that'll be interesting then because she... Obviously, Rey witnessing Han falling, she's obviously going to relay that information to Luke, and I can't see for 1 minute he's not going to want to catch up with Leia.
Yeah, if he doesn't already know.
True, maybe he's got an alternative reason. He's got another reason, a better reason. It's hard to tell. He's keeping people safe, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
I mean, he would willingly go into isolation forever to keep his sister safe anyway, wouldn't he? So, and she would know why.
Hmm. And it does. I know we're going a little bit off topic, but
we just don't know what's going to happen. It's as simple.
That's where the fun is. The whole the motives behind Luke's being in hiding are unclear as well, aren't they?
Somewhat, yeah.
What is he hiding to protect?
It's almost like I wonder if he's become the keeper of the wills because he's the last true Jedi.
Yeah, he's the only person that can pass that information along, or at least he needs to be able to tap Rey into whatever resources he's tapped into. So if he is regularly communing with Yoda, Obi-Wan, possibly even Qui-Gon, he needs to get the next Jedi to a position where they can do that, and then then anything can happen to Luke because that next Jedi will be able to develop their own skills to a point where they can then pass it on.
Mm.
So at the moment, that seems to me to be the resource that Luke's protecting. It's himself because he's got a lot of work to do to get the next Jedi up to speed in order to confront Snoke and Kylo.
Yeah. That's cool.
We don't know if there might be something else. There might be some sort of Jedi super weapon that is hidden inside Ark 2. Who knows what he's hiding? I think that it's clearly his knowledge and experience, but there could be other motives at play, and that's all stuff we need to learn, and we need to learn that early on, I think.
He might just be lodging, and all those little critters that we're learning about might be the Keeper of the Wills.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they could be. I mean, we did think early on that they were a convery and they would be force sensitive creatures. I think that's pretty clearly not the case now, but I mean, it's too soon to really place bets on any of this stuff, isn't it?
Mm.
But Rob, thank you very much for your email, sir, and thank you for including me in Generation X-Wing this week. They had the clips of the Commonwealth as giving early Star Wars memories.
Yeah.
So there was quite a few of us that sent in little clips to them. I was listening to that today. It was really lovely. So thanks for letting me be a part of that. We've got a question this week from Randomitable. Rob, would you like to take that?
I can do, yep. So this is from Randomitable, and it reads, all read there, star SWC type peeps. I was listening to episode 70 of TSW today, in particular the part about the emotion that fuels the various Sith. I'm guessing this is the one that I missed. It sounds like the one I missed.
The one you were on holiday, yeah.
Yeah. So wandering through a select few, we have Maul, unbridled rage for reasons we don't know. Oh, not a great start. Vader, anger at his inability to save Padme, but also frustration because Anakin clearly believed so completely that Sidious could achieve this goal that having done everything asked of him and it didn't work, all he had was no. Dooku, a kind of British irritation with the bureaucratic and ineffective approach of the Jedi. Clearly this guy was massively talented, though, just my two cents. Sidious, no idea. Kylo, parental disillusionment. Right, so now he's killed his father, and with that, the fuel to his Sith fire. Is Kylo a spent force or what? Hashtag, may the force be with you. Well, he's done the acronym, but it means the same thing.
Yeah.
So what do we think?
Yeah, is Kylo Ren out of fuel in The Last Jedi now that he's killed his father? I was just discussing this in the live group, actually, so...
Okay.
It might explain why he had so much trouble against Finn and Rey.
Yeah, I mean...
Because he was struggling, wasn't he? I mean, he was struggling mentally and physically, and you could see he was not only... I mean, it wasn't just the fight. He was fighting himself.
Mm-hmm.
Still. So, I like the idea of that. It's one of those things that I had to do it. I'm glad I did it, and now I'm really actually not glad I did it, and I don't know, but I think I knew. And
he's bum fuzzled,
big time. Wang thingy burbled, whatever it is. So, yeah.
There's actually I should address two things before we move on. There was an extra point in it which referenced Bane, but because that's the expanded universe, or you know,
okay,
I thought we'd drop it because there's not a lot that ties into the movies, just for the topic of conversation. And also, he's put number one on Bridled Rage for reasons we don't yet know. We do know they're starting to come out in the comic book.
Maul
was conditioned by Sidious very early on to see the Jedi as monsters who annihilated the Sith and the Sith way of life, and he sort of framed the Jedi as these beasts that kind of haunt Maul's nightmares, you know. It's very interesting. It's all told visually in the books. It's really interesting. So we know that for him, he was kind of radicalized from a young age by Sidious. And that does kind of set up Kylo a little bit, where I think he's also the victim of this kind of manipulation at the hands of Snoke. The thing we were discussing earlier in the Facebook Live session was how this is probably most likely this trilogy, I think, is going to be a redemption story arc for Kylo, with him coming back in the third chapter. And I think we're hearing a lot of talk at the moment from places like MakingStarWars.net that Kylo in The Last Jedi is very much filled with regret over the murder of Han. And I think he was told by Snoke, if you do this, you'll become more powerful. In the novelization, he references Vader's compassion as being the undoing of the Sith. If he could have avoided the compassion he felt for his son, then the Sith would still be in power. And that seems to be what Snoke is telling Kylo in The Force Awakens. And if you strike down your father, that will be what you need. You'll be stronger because... You know, you keep being pulled back to the light. Kylo's not really a bad guy. He's just trying to be. And I think he's trying to keep himself submerged in the dark side. And the best way, it seems, to do that was kill Han. And that whole exchange, that heartbreaking exchange on the catwalk where he says, I'm being torn apart. He looks at his father then as his way out of that.
He wasn't sure if it was the correct way out, but it was a way out.
Missed the path he committed to. And this is now, I think, what he regrets. So, yeah, I think that maybe that was that misunderstanding of his situation is probably what fueled all of his actions and what fueled the murder of Han Solo. And now that's gone. What the question really is, what's left now?
Mm. It's interesting because there's a mild parallel here between, you think of the fight between Darth and Luke on the second Death Star whilst Emperor's just watching. Mm-hmm. And it was that rage and rage and rage that built up within Luke as he was taking out his father.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just at that last moment.
Yeah.
A little glimmer of something said, whoa, chill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Come back. And Kylo might get that, but unfortunately it's going to be late.
Mm. Yeah, so I think he needs a lifeline. I think Rey is Kylo's lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
Someone needs to be able to reach down inside this, because Kylo Ren's a beast.
Oh my.
Kylo Ren is a beast of Ben Solo's making, the way Vader was this beast of Anakin's making. Mm-hmm. And there are others. They both make their own decisions. They both make their own choices. But there are other factors impacting on the decisions that are made. With Kylo, it's Snoke whispering in his ear, and with Anakin, it was always Palpatine whispering in his ear and laying track, really, for the decisions that got made. And the guys that ended up at the heart of these monsters really didn't have much of a choice. You know, every option they had, every off-ramp was countered with a, oh no, if you do this, she's going to die. You know, it's all of that stuff.
Mm.
And with Kylo, I think there might be something else fueling it. It's growing up as this this gifted, force sensitive, who's the mother, who his mother's like this squib.
Mm-hmm.
In the Harry Potter universe, they'd call her a squib. It's the force thing skipped a generation as far as his parentage is concerned, and there's no one there really to guide him. The only person who's got to guide him is Uncle Luke.
Yeah.
And there must have been all the time, there must have been a comparison. You know, your grandfather, Anakin Skywalker, was this hero of the Republic. He was this amazing Jedi Knight. And all the time they held back that little piece of information, oh, and by the way, he was the biggest, baddest monster in the universe.
Mm.
They kept that from him. So he's grown up in the shadow of this Republic hero, this legendary Jedi Knight.
Mm.
Add into that, he kind of, from a certain point of view, brought down the Sith single-handedly. He was the chosen one.
Yeah.
Like, Ben Solo's grown up in the shadow of this thing, but all the time he's being told, you've got this promise, you've got this promise. When the news drops, oh yeah, and by the way, this person you've been compared to all these years, this like dominant force in your life, also happened to be Darth Vader. That's motivated him, I think. And then Snoke's come along and said, yeah, but you can be that too.
Mm-hmm.
And you can finish that work. It's like the dark side version of Luke's speech, you know, my father had it, my sister had it.
Mm.
It's the dark side version of that. You can be that too.
It does make you think that might be a theme throughout The Last Jedi. So he's trying his best to kind of prove himself and taking on this kind of pet project of bringing in, either taking out or bringing in Rey.
Yeah.
Because he knows that, he sort of feels weaker than he was because of everything that happened at the end of TFA.
Yeah.
That theme going out, you know, even if that's not what's actually happening, if he's worried about that, then it's gonna, you know, he'll draw on the fear, but at the same time he'll also be wary of being replaced.
Yes.
Because, you know, obviously we don't know that they're anything to do with the Sith, but he's no doubt heard about the Sith, so he knows that they're always two. So if he's worried that, oh, what if he, what's actually, you know, we are kind of Sithy.
Mm.
I don't know what the word Sith-esque.
This will depend on Snoke's agenda largely, won't it? Will Snoke offer up the Sith as the blueprint of how not to do it, of how it's not done?
Yeah.
The constant competition. I don't think Snoke would invite that.
No.
You know, the rule of two, the power struggle that comes with that. I don't think Snoke would invite that. I think he'd be much more comfortable saying, let's share power.
Yeah.
And you can be my right-hand man. I'll make all these decisions you don't need to be bothered with.
I think he'd pretend he was sharing power. But at the end of the day, he'd still want set the throne.
Mm.
Yeah, well, Snoke, yes, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. And something I've been playing around with this, an idea I've been playing around with this week, and I put it out on the Kessel Run earlier in the week, was that Kylo might destroy Snoke in this film. And Snoke might actually be, for all the years we've spent saying, who is he? Is he Plagueis? Is he this? Is he that? Is he the reincarnation of Mace Windu? It, all of these random and out there theories. And what it might be is that Snoke's really nothing but a way to facilitate Ben's fall. And then Ben will strike out because of what Snoke has made him do. And if Ben Solo really does regret what Snoke made him do, he might strike out and cut down Snoke and assume power himself.
Yeah.
And once he's got a taste of that, once he's in that big seat, he might stay there until at least partway through the final movie as the big bad, until Rey comes along and pulls him back. Would you think the chances are of that happening?
As likely as anything else, mate.
At this point, it's equally plausible.
I love the idea, though. I love this. What Randomitable was put in this question about the lack of Sith fire fueling Kylo. Mm. I love the idea that he's gotten that far thinking that's the key to unlocking everything. And really all it does is weaken him.
Mm.
To a point where he's directionless. Well, that's really cool. Thank you, Rando, for your question.
Mm.
Right, we've got an email from Dave Donovan. Paul, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, no worries. Oh, sorry. I had an alarm go off at my end. I don't know what it was. Oh. Okay, from Dave Donovan. Once more, the Sith will rule the galaxy. Ah, Rob should have done this. Seriously, rewind. Rob, read it anyway.
Once more, the Sith will rule the galaxy. Hoo-wah.
When did they rule the galaxy? What do we know of it? And do we really truly believe that Palpatine wants to restore the Sith or simply have ultimate power for himself? His motives don't seem to be in re-establishing the Sith to me, just to have all the power. Your thoughts as always, eagerly awaited. Dave. I don't know. I mean, please excuse my ignorance here. I've completely forgotten this, but when was that quote?
That was in...
is that in
Revenge of the Sith?
It is in Revenge of the Sith. So, I mean...
Just about Order 66 time.
Right, all the things you've read before, have you read anything extended canon that explains that quote?
I haven't read anything that explains that quote directly.
Justifies it, even.
No, but we know that the Sith had been gone for millennia. If you deal with just the movies as your source of reference, without going into expanding materials or any text on like Wikipedia or whatever, we know that the Sith had been gone for a millennia when Maul pops up, which is a long time for a religious order to be down, right?
Here's the thing. I think the explanation for this is no longer canon.
Right,
because it used to be that there was a Sith Jedi war in the Old Republic, which the Sith came out on top of for a while, and then the Jedi sort of had a resurgence under the reformed Darth Revan. But I don't think... Obviously, it's not canon anymore, and I don't know that they've filled that gap yet.
No.
So it's interesting because obviously at the time that would have been canon, I think. Yeah, because KOTOR had been out by then. So it would have been canon that the Sith Jedi War would have been, at least if not, there was a more, if there wasn't a more recent example, there would have at least been that.
But abandoning those elements doesn't break canon at all, does it? Because they're sort of throwaway references in the movies and... The expanded material that was built up around it can be non-canon without breaking continuity of our films. So really all we've got to go on in the films are that reference to the millennia long downtime.
Yeah.
And then Palpatine's once more we shall rule the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. But the extension of the question is, you know, whether... Is he, like you say, a power sharer? Is he? Does he want Sith to have ultimate power across the galaxy, or is it still really him that wants to, you know, sitting on the main throne and being marionette for all of these other?
Absolutely, just him. Absolutely,
yeah, of course it is.
Him.
I think, to be honest, any more powerful Sith Lord that comes along is always going to want to be top dog.
Yeah, period. Yeah, of course. That's the way the dynamic works, isn't it?
Well, that's the way usually darkness works, because darkness is seeking power, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the thing. So yeah, it's completely. I'm going to let you think that, you know, we're a two-act, you know, he's reaching Darth Maul, you know, my friend, and all this kind of thing. But in
the, hello, buddy.
Yeah, it's like at the end of the day, though, it's like, get your ass out there and do as you're told kind of situation. So
yeah, and what we're seeing in the Darth Maul comic book as well is how much fear Palpatine has put in to Maul through a life of training this kid and abusing this kid and terrorizing this kid with the idea of what the Jedi were.
Yeah,
he rules that guy by fear, and the only thing he's offering is revenge on the Jedi. He just, all Maul is motivated by is killing Jedi, and for him that works. And Palpatine can put himself at the top of the tree and say, "I'm going to pull Maul's strings over here. All you want to do is kill him. So you just focus on that until you've outlived your usefulness." Now Dooku has other things motivating him. And Palpatine changes his game slightly and plays straight to what Dooku wants, doesn't he? About sort of political reform, Dooku's view of justice in the galaxy. He's playing on those things. And then when Dooku's outlived his usefulness, it moves to Anakin, and he has to change his game again, and then it becomes much more personal. I can give you these magical powers. That means you never have to lose anybody again.
Yeah.
He's always moving it. It's never about one ideal. It's not. There's no uniform ideal where he sits down with each Sith apprentice and says, look, you're always going to want to overthrow me. I know that's how it's going to work. And you can always expect that I'm going to replace you with the next person. But the ideal we're pursuing here is the Sith ideal. Can you hear the dog barking in the background?
Yeah.
Doesn't agree with you, mate.
Poppy, shut it. So yeah, there is nowhere in those three different approaches from Palpatine, nowhere is a uniform mandate. He's not saying this is what the Sith stand for, this is what we're going for.
Are you suggesting Palpatine went on a lot of mandates?
Maybe. He was on Sith Tinder.
Yeah.
I don't, or it would probably be Sith Grinder, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a man that's found a framework within which to operate, where he can manipulate the people he needs to do his bidding, but at the end of it, he gets all the spoils.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to add to that, Rob?
Not really.
I think it is. You know, he's always going to be about being top dog, and it's just about, you know, what can he do? What does he have to do to keep it that way?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, I mean, certainly what I don't understand, even in like Revenge of the Sith, in the novel, they sort of do a little bit of back and forth with Sidious and Dooku before Anakin and Obi-Wan turn up. And if you're Dooku, what are you thinking at that point? Like, what are you, you know, what's your kind of, oh, well, you know, he's just going to change the rule of two.
Yeah.
That's fine. Either that or he doesn't know about it because it's not been, you know.
This is, like, we see this also between Vader, the Emperor, and Luke. And at no point, like, the Emperor kind of says, like, oh, yeah, let's add him to our number. We'll be really, really powerful.
And yeah.
That's why this is my favourite scene of the whole saga, really. It's Vader saying, look, if we can flip this kid and turn him to the dark side, like, it'd be a really powerful ally for us. And the Emperor says, oh, yeah, I wonder if that can work. At no point are they saying, great, rule of two's over, rule of three's in, yay. What they're talking about, like the slow motion jump in the air and the high five, what they're really talking about is...
Well, the Emperor openly says, take your father's side, doesn't
he? Yeah,
take
your father's, and that's what's going unsaid all the time, isn't it? Oh yeah, let's get this kid, will be a great addition. And Vader's thinking, when I kill you, and the Emperor's thinking, when I get him to kill you. And that's the dynamic. That's what's fascinating about the Sith dynamic. So with Dooku in that situation you just put out there, Rob, he's probably thinking, yeah, well, I'm going to get rid of you, and then Anakin will be my apprentice. Because they're always there's always that ambition in there that blinds them, right? They say ambition bites the nails of success. And for these Sith, it's the ambition that robs them of real perspective on their situation.
Yeah.
Palpatine was always going to dispatch Dooku or have him dispatch. I mean,
it puts them in a state of constant fear.
Yeah, and that's what drives them, though, isn't it? That's at the heart of what they do.
Well, because the fear turns to hate, so...
Yeah, anger, fear, and aggression. Mm. So it's a really... Of all the things that George created that are cool, this Sith dynamic is
very, very
one of the best. It's so intriguing. And dramatically, when you see it play out on screen, all of those scenarios are undercut by this infighting, this backstabbing, this... Their treacherous nature is just fantastic.
It's funny because we're kind of, and I'm not knocking the question in any means by saying this, but we're having almost the same conversation we just had about Kylo and Snoke.
Yeah, and this is the thing, because this is now the third time we're going to see it, potentially. And will it play out the same way? Will it be Snoke? Is Snoke's designs on Rey now? Is it, well, I'll add her to my arsenal, so now I've got Hux, and then I've got Phasma. It's almost like he's collecting hot toys, and I've got Kylo Ren. We'll get rid of Luke because he's a real major threat. But is he thinking now I'll have an army of these powerful? Or is he thinking I'll just cycle her in and I'll get rid of the others because she's all I need? Is the rule of two, because we view the rule of two as being weak, is that the way Snoke views it? And will he bring a new approach to it in these new movies?
Intriguing.
Yes, indeed.
Very much so. Well, Dave, they ruled a millennia ago. It's pretty much the best we can do.
Best
we talked about that for about 5 seconds.
We've got in the absence of knowledge of canon answers.
Yeah.
But
like you say, some of the KOTOR stuff that would have been applicable seems to have been jettisoned. But going on just the movies alone, I think it's a millennia since the Sith were vanquished. And now, Palpatine's just in it for Palpatine. And not he's not trying to further any Sith mission or mandate. It's all just about him and unlimited power. Great stuff. Thank you, Dave. All right, we've screamed right up to our break, so we will shoot off now, and then when we come back, we will back into Connor's Corner. We'll be right back. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, you can do so by becoming a TSW sponsor. For as little as £1 per month, given securely via PayPal, you'll help us keep the lights on here at Talk Star Wars. When you become a TSW sponsor, we will automatically make you a TSW VIP. As a VIP, you'll get access to an exclusive stream of content that provides you with a daily podcast called the TSW Kessel Run, membership to the TSW VIP Facebook group, priority releases of shows such as the TSW Toy Box and TSW Comics. You'll also get priority access to the TSW Feature Com series and weekly Facebook Live and AMA sessions. There are also newsletters and a monthly prize draw. Head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support and become a TSW sponsor today, and the Force will be with you always.
And we're back. So as you've just heard, you can become part of the ever-growing Talk Star Wars VIP community by going to talkstarwars.co.uk/support, which means that you get a number of perks, which seem to increase every time I do this promo. But as is customary, after hearing about that, it's time for Connor's Corner featuring Leo. So Connor writes thusly, "How are you guys? Well, I hope. So good to hear all of you back on last week, which of course was another quality show as per usual. Thank you for indulging me with last week's section. God knows, in this current climate of craziness, we could all do with a laugh. But if you like craziness, Connor, might I recommend the Crazy Train podcast from Emotionally 14? Crazy. So this week, I'd like your opinion on the use of legacy characters. I'm referring to something in particular. I watched episode 3 on Tuesday night. The appearance of Chewie in it and the fact that Yoda beheads two troopers in one blow in front of Chewie, then climbs on his back and makes his exit. Something one wouldn't easily forget. Yeah, that's fair. So skip forward 20-something years to a Mos Eisley cantina, and an old robed geezer lops off an arm in a similar way. So did Chewie talk Han into taking the fare to Alderaan? Or Endor? Sorry, the Speed of Life.
Yeah. We only just heard that, though.
Yeah, I've been working on the gain and seems to be having a positive effect.
Got it I think.
So we see Chewie and Obi-Wan talking at the bar. What was said? So let's skip forward to the... You said it, Chewie. Where did you dig up that old fossil? What do you think? I know there can be a very simple answer to this, and it could just be the prequels hadn't been penned, and George wanted his Wookiee war that he wanted for Return of the Jedi. Let's face it, you lot talking about it is always better, and we love it. I'm maybe extrapolating the voice there. Well, he's Irish, actually. I definitely am. Thanks, guys, for giving us a truly excellent show each and every week. Brackets, even when Mark thinks it's rubbish. Hashtag, prove me wrong. The Commonwealth Network has become the truly dominant audio presence in my daily commute to work, and having you guys and the other podcasts make and brighten my day. And for this, I thank you. Your friends, Connor and Leo. All right, just get zoned. This email was brought to you by Jundland Fertilizers. Our produce stinks, not our prices.
Get worse.
See, this could be a new...
I like it. I like that they're getting worse. Connor.
A new t-shirt every week, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, dude, you should.
Jundland Fertilizers.
This one. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a... Yeah, I enjoyed these. Keep them coming, Connor. I like these.
As long as you're right, then Rob will do the announcer voice because you get a kick out of that, don't you, Rob?
Indeed. Yeah. Anything that lets me practice voice work, really, is kind of nice. No. Maybe I should become a voice actor. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, if anybody's got voice projects, any of the Commonwealth listeners, then, tweet me at Rob Wade Vision. Let's make this happen, shall we?
Get yourself on Fiverr, mate.
Fiverr?
Yeah. We'll talk about it later.
Please. I don't get out of bed for less than tenner.
There you go. You've got a new enterprise. Well, you know. There's an enterprise for you.
Yep. Tenner. All right. So, all right, so let's break it. Let's go back to let's regain the rails. Did Obi-Wan say something to Chewie that convinced Han to take the job?
Hmm.
What do you think? I want to know now he said that. It makes me think, yeah, you said it, Chewie. Where did you dig up that old fossil? What did Chewie say?
Yeah.
Was he just hurling abuse at him?
Well, we know there is an actual answer to that, believe it or not. From seriously? Yes and no. There isn't a canon answer. But on the special features for A New Hope, there is a version of that scene which has the production audio.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you hear Peter Mayhew say something.
You hear Peter Mayhew say something. And you can hear in the background, you can hear all the clunking of the armour, like the fiberglass sort of clattering around those stormtrooper suits. So the audio is an absolute terrible mess. And on the DVD and on the Blu-ray, There's that scene, and it's Han saying, "Where did you dig up?" Oh, no, he said, Chewie says something like, "That old man's crazy."
But yeah, in, that's
the
said.
Proper Peter Mayhew voice.
The Death Star scene, yeah.
When they're on,
I was hoping
it'd
be Dave Prowse doing any voice work that's going to be dubbed in. Just...
as the farmer, his farmer voice.
That old man's crazy. You said it, Chewie.
The second part of the breakdown, by the way, is me making stuff up. I just added a little question on there because I really like to sort of talk about this Chewbacca use in episode 3 in a minute. But to address the first part, what did he say to Obi-Wan? I don't think he said anything.
I don't think he says anything. I think the conversation is something along the lines of Ben saying,
"I need a ship."
I understand you work with a good pilot, and Chewie saying, "Yeah, he's not around, but if you wait, he'll come in and have a drink soon." That kind of thing. He's like, "Yeah, I'll get him for you," but I don't think it's more than I'll arrange for him to come in. But that said, there's a deleted scene where Han's in the corner with some rather attractive alien as well, isn't there? So
yeah, there is.
So he is already in there.
I thought that was Koo Stark, but I actually think that she might play Cammy in the deleted section where Luke was referred to as Wormy and he goes to fix his place, all of that stuff from the book.
How old would Cook Stark have been in 1976?
Like 19 or something. She's about Carrie's age, so I think. Yeah, it could have been Koo Stark in that deleted scene with Han. But yeah, it showed him as being a bit more of a scallywag than I think George wanted at that point. Even then, as he was first breathing life into Han Solo, I think he was trying to pull it back a little bit, or he went a little bit too far. But yeah, I don't think that there's any. I don't think there was any secret handshake between Chewie and Obi-Wan that said, "Oh yeah, I know the Jedi because I was on Kashyyyk and all that sort of stuff."
Yeah,
but that's.
I think it's unlikely. To be honest, I think he would have just been following the money.
Yes, yeah, is that doing his first mate thing for the Falcon?
He's a pirate. Yeah. That's all. Sent you a rather interesting picture.
Yeah, that's right. The one. So that might be Koo Stark. I'm not sure. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
But this second part of the breakdown then, how do you guys feel about the use of Chewbacca in that scene that Connor's referring to in Revenge of the Sith?
I don't recall the actual scene, I'm afraid, but I found
it a little bit too... You know, like, again, it's like galaxy small.
Yes.
It was kind of cool in like a, oh, look, way. But the more I, you know, looking back on it, I would have been fine if they'd just alluded to him being somewhere nearby rather than actually showing him on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose if you've got Peter Mayhew, you want to use him, right?
Yeah, I guess. I just think, I think it was a misstep personally. And in a film where there aren't that many, Revenge of the Sith is one of the more robust of the three prequels. But the decision to throw Chewie in there, I thought was almost whimsical to the point where it almost betrays what George did in Return of the Jedi when he reimagined that Endor battle, which was originally supposed to be Kashyyyk, or not necessarily Kashyyyk, but it was supposed to be the Wookiee homeworld.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ewoks were supposed to be the Wookiees, and they were supposed to be primitive.
Yeah.
But Lucas decided, no, I've already brought Chewbacca up to a point where he's no longer primitive because he's a pilot and he's a mechanic. Mm. And he's like the loyal sidekick as well. You know, he's one of our main heroes. So we can't then say, well, here is his community and they are all primitive.
But he could have been one of a kind.
He could have been one of a kind. That would have been the sensible way to put it. But what we tend to see, I think, in Revenge of the Sith is we do see that kind of primitive community. It's almost like the Avatar homeworld, Kashyyyk, isn't it? With them all living in trees and it's all very tribal. So I still think that Chewie going off and becoming first mate on the Falcon is a huge leap from what we see as the Wookiee army on Kashyyyk with their little, almost like... They've almost got like bamboo flying ships and stuff like that, and then living in tree houses. So it's like he's trying to have his cake and eat it. He wants Chewie to be what Chewie became, but he still wants to try and get the Wookiees to be the Viet Cong stand-in that he always had in mind for the third part of the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just strikes me as, not to mention, Rob, what you said is absolutely right, this is the small world stuff as well. Yoda knowing Chewie, that's too much.
Mm.
It's too much. They don't need to be connected. And remember, Han doesn't believe in the Jedi. So did Chewie just go, oh, well, I know a bloke named Yoda. Oh, no, don't worry.
That's a really good point, mate.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's
Han's so dismissive of it.
That's a big ball drop.
But does it say more about, I don't think this is one of those threads that you can tug on and there's more there. I really don't think there's much more there, but you could sort of follow that thought through and say, well, maybe Chewbacca didn't really get what was going on Kashyyyk at the time. He didn't really understand what Yoda was, didn't really understand what the Jedi was. Then you diminish Chewbacca in a way.
He was with Yoda a fair bit though, wasn't he?
He gave him a piggyback.
Yeah, like you say, he gave him a piggyback, so...
And he sent him in his ship, and Yoda's like, oh, goodbye, Chewbacca, and goodbye, Wookiee, what we don't know and we'll never see again. It's all of that stuff.
I guess they just hoped for a little bit of amnesia from the crowd.
And in that case, when you get to Han and Chewie and their life together, does Han say, well, I don't believe in the Jedi, and Chewie says, well, whatever, I'm not even going to bother trying. Does it paint Han as being ignorant? And a tad arrogant as to ignore the tales that Chewie has to tell about.
But Han was to a degree, wasn't he?
Hmm.
I mean, but that's what sold him.
Closed-minded,
Yeah, that's what sold him. We had nice, warm and open Luke and reliable Luke. And, you just want to, just make sure you stay friends with Luke and stuff. But at the same time, you're like, oh, man, he's cool. He doesn't give a toss. He goes from this to this. He does what he wants. He's got a pistol on his side.
Yeah.
So, all of the ingredients between the two were perfect because of that.
Mm.
So there was an element of arrogance about Han, and he probably wouldn't have given him monkeys about some of the stories Chewie told him from that regard anyway.
Mm.
Yeah, he'll believe what he's inclined to believe, and that's that. Are we missing anything?
I mean, they may well have had many of the conversations that Han and Ben had on the Falcon. So,
yeah, there's nothing in canon that points to any backstory here, is there? And maybe we'll learn a bit more in Han Solo, or maybe they'll just do the wise thing and just not look at that at all.
Hmm.
I think you're going to get snippets of canon, but I think they're going to go for the roller coaster ride.
What, in the Han Solo movie?
I
think you're right. And it would be kind of a mistake as well, because you don't want to derail a film from the inside by looking at potential adventures that Chewbacca had.
Yeah, the overall surroundings don't matter to what they're supposed to be delivering.
No. There was this thing, do you remember Chewie used to be referred to as the Mighty Chewbacca?
Mm.
There was that whole thing.
Yeah, kind of.
Mighty Chewbacca.
Yeah. I wonder if he was ever like this decorated war hero for his efforts on Kashyyyk.
Mm.
The decorated war hero that went off and became a smuggler with someone because he had life debt.
It could be, yeah.
Will they expend any film time on that in the Han Solo movie?
It didn't give him much for help blowing up the Death Star, didn't they?
Yeah.
No, the dog got nothing.
Didn't even get a bowl of food.
Didn't even get a bone.
Yeah.
Apparently he did. That's been retconned. He did get
throw
a medal.
Throw me a damn bone here.
Yeah, I think that was on
the comics.
Gen X-Wing this week. I was in the comics.
It's in the comics.
Wars comic, the main run.
Yeah, spoilers. In the Chewbacca run. The 4 or 5 issue run Chewbacca. Spoilers, he gives it away.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah.
Doesn't sell it like on eBay.
No. No, there's no priority shipping in Star Wars, because you can just deliver it yourself and it's probably about the same price.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true.
That's a question, actually. A really boring one, but I wonder what the postal situation is like in Star Wars. If you can communicate at the speed of light, why would you bother,
What, sending anything? I'm sure that they have stuff shipped around, like heirlooms, your father's lightsaber, parts for a Nubian.
Yeah.
Okay. Connor, thank you so much for your question again this week.
As ever.
And you, Leo, thank you very much. And thanks for the idea for the T-shirt, Jundland Fertilizers.
So what was that, Mark?
Jundland Fertilizers. Our poodoo stinks, not our prices.
Actually, going back to the 5-star review, there's got to be something else in there you can steal. Cattywampus and slangwangerisms.
Perhaps I need to start putting these things in Aurabesh on a t-shirt. Yeah, any opportunity we have to skip the word testiculations would probably be good.
Yeah.
All right, should we do some news bits then? There's not much going on in terms of news this week. We had a couple of bits that come out from San Diego Comic-Con. And also Apple's WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, that came out this week. The most unexpected place to see Star Wars, I can tell you. But with regard to San Diego Comic-Con, they're getting exclusive Funko Pops. Tim wrote a piece on the site about this. Rob, you like a pop.
I do. This is true.
Mm.
So there will be a hologram Leia and an R2-D2. D2-D2, apparently, on the show.
The hologram's taller than the R2.
Yeah.
Maybe
I don't think they're ever to scale.
No.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
No.
You need to put them far apart.
Yeah, the expensive ones would be really, really
she's
big.
She's got a hell of a cranium.
She has. How does she get that dress on? I think the Snoke one, there's a Snoke also, and he's a little bit larger than your average pop. I think he's 6 inches, that pop.
Six inches about right for the big ones. They do certain ones in a larger size. Let me think of some examples. I think Doomsday in the Batman Superman run was a 6-inch one.
Right. Was that comic book? Doomsday or they're just
monster. A bit, you know, they're a bit chunkier than the others. Kong Skull Island, King Kong.
All right.
For some reason, Hagrid, because why not? Let's see what else we got. Oh, hang on, they're saying all pops are 6-inch.
Ah.
Well, the Game of Thrones dragons are large size as well.
Well, this Artu and Leia are very different in height, aren't they? So
somewhat, yeah. I think that's fair to say.
I'd like a 3PO and Artu. That would be good.
Mm.
In this range that's coming out at Comic-Con, exclusives will be Leia and R2, Snoke, also in hologram form, a tank trooper, and from Rogue One we're getting Bodhi, which is a shared exclusive. They haven't announced what the other outlet will be that's sharing the exclusive with Comic-Con, but I suspect it's the Smuggler's Bounty subscription box.
Mm.
Sounds like could it. Be. That makes sense, I think.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, they do tend to, you know, the Smuggler's Bounty ones have exclusives in them, generally. The pops.
Yeah, they just had the Luke with the land speeder, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
Mm.
Okay, that's really cool. At WWDC, we had John Knoll came out, and he was talking about VR. And they showed what the new iMac is capable of doing. It was running, what's it called, HTC's Vive, is it the Vive?
Yep.
Which is a VR headset. Mm-hmm. So the new iMacs can run VR headsets. And they had a Star Wars simulation of Mustafar playing. Did either of you guys see this video?
No, I didn't.
Pretty not.
It was pretty cool. They did it. It was being done live. So they had somebody backstage on a green screen set.
Yeah.
And she was in the VR environment, so she put the Vive on. And then John Knoll was on stage, and he was talking her through it, and she was walking around on Mustafar, and they'd comped in what she was seeing on the green screen, so you can actually see her comped into the environment that she was seeing.
I'm looking at it now. Oh, my God.
All running live off of an iMac, which is ridiculous. Mm. And this is like a pretty huge endorsement of Apple by ILM, really, who are developing this stuff. And it was pretty good. It was pretty cool. It doesn't look like the sort of thing I imagine getting much mileage out of. A really nice experience, sort of one-off, I would think. Because they did a great thing where Vader sort of ignited his lightsaber and he went after the woman. And as he was sort of bringing the lightsaber down for the kill blow, she froze everything and then ducked under the lightsaber blade. It just looked fantastic.
Nice. That's awesome.
All being driven by an iMac. Ridiculous. Yeah. But that was a nice look. So I'm not sure what the idea is of that VR setting, if that's going to be something that's going to come out for developers and later for us to get an experience of on the new devices. But Apple are sort of pushing a lot of VR on their next generation. On the iPhone and on the iPads, they've all got VR in iOS 11. They've got VR compatibility.
Yeah.
So you can project images onto flat surfaces. It's just sort of showing the way the VR engine can interact with your environment and lay documents onto your desk or onto the wall. It's really cool. And they do a lot of stuff. There's a lot of gameplay sort of being played out live. They had someone holding up an iPad. And there was gameplay on the desktop, these little characters running around, out fighting a war, spaceships flying around. It's unbelievable what they were able to do. But the Star Wars stuff did look pretty mouth-watering.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on from that, Rancho Obi-Wan. Did you see this story this week? Steve Sansweet's museum, Rancho Obi-Wan, has been the victim of something like a $200,000 theft.
Yeah, I saw this. It's crazy.
There's a list, I think, that's been published now.
It's
hundreds of items that were allegedly stolen by a friend. Over a long period of time. They do name him. I haven't done so here.
Well, it's obviously hard to... I mean, that's a, you know...
It's actually...
Unsubstantiated. I'm not saying that we shouldn't believe them, but obviously it's an accusation.
Yeah, it's something I didn't feel was really necessary for the subject.
Well, that's
it. For us to kick it around. But
yeah.
It was, I mean, this gentleman is, he's out on a $25,000 bail at the moment. So there's definitely something to the charges. And Steve Sansweet referred to what was taken as vintage US and foreign carded action figures, many of them rare and important pieces that have been taken. So he's also asked collectors to be vigilant, and already a couple of people that have picked up these bits on the black market have offered to return them even if they don't get the money back.
Fair play.
Which is lovely, isn't it? But, you know, once those things are out there, they are so rare that you wouldn't be able to do much with them. They're almost priceless because you wouldn't be able to sell them on and get market value, because how can you put a price on something that should never be out there in the first place, you know? And that's what Steve Sansweet is doing up there at Rancho Obi-Wan, to be taken advantage of like this. I mean, I know it's not exactly a charity for sick bunnies, but it's important stuff he's collected together there for us as fans of this thing. And for someone just to sneak around in there and just take advantage like that, when we all know what these things are worth, it's in bad taste, really.
Yeah, it's not nice.
So tisk, sir.
Indeed. Poor form.
Indeed. So I hope that they get to recover most of this swag.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, were you going to say something, mate?
No, I've got a cough.
Oh, right, okay, fair enough.
Hang on.
It's a mute button.
No Force Awakens or Rogue One bits to discuss this week, but we do have, there's a couple of bits of Last Jedi news and some Han Solo stuff. I've also got something I wanted to mention about Episode 9, which I didn't put in the show notes. And before we get into spoiler territory, I'll just say that last night I got a press release from Lucasfilm detailing the return of Lego Star Wars The Freemaker Adventures to Disney XD. That's coming back. There's a one-off episode in June, and then it hits the air proper in July. So they're doing what they do with Rebels when that goes to air. They sort of drop the first episode, the premiere episode, way in advance, and then they disappear for like a month and then come back and bring the rest of the show in. And then it's every day, Monday through Thursday, for like 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. So if you're a fan of the Freemaker Adventures, that's coming back for season two, which is pretty cool. And Vanessa Marshall is attached. Hera's going to be in it too. It's quite a fun little show. It's definitely for the younger fan, but it's quite fun. It's always nice to watch a bit of Lego animation, he says, looking at the game he bought sitting in front of him that he hasn't played yet. Okay, The Last Jedi and Han Solo news have potential spoilers, as will the one thing we're going to discuss about Episode 9. So you have been warned. If you want to jump out now, we'll understand, and we'll catch up with you next week. All right, Last Jedi, makingstarwars.net have some ideas about the Praetorian Guard, who are Snoke's guards, and what they will look like. There's an illustration there, that little red figure is an illustration, and I'm
a little bit like the Imperial Guard.
They're very much built on the Imperial Guard, from what I'm hearing.
Meets the Michelin Man.
Yeah, meets the Michelin Man. I'm just going to show you
in a skirt
another piece of artwork that Adam put into the Facebook group this evening.
Oh, I've seen those.
You've seen them all. Well, this is, I think, the Praetorian Guard in action. So it looks a little bit like the visor that we see shut here flips back.
That's a far cooler look.
Now, that image I've just pasted in now to the show chat.
I thought a little bit of the URL said pimp. I was like, that is accurate. That is an amazing picture.
Yeah. It is pretty cool. And it just goes to show what the weapon actually looks like. I mean, this image on makingstarwars.net is pretty accurate with regards to the forms that are on display, like the layered armoured arm, the plated sort of armour.
We don't see a great deal of blood in Star Wars.
No.
I think these are sparks from the descriptions that I'm reading. I think this is these pikes, these spears are like an energy weapon. Well, I would hope so, because it's going to be a bloody movie. If that
otherwise, it's good. It's a bit of Shogun Assassin sort of situation going on here.
Mm. They look good, though, don't they?
It looks a bit splatterpunk, mate. But there you go. No, I'm not being funny. I'm intrigued by it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. So they're kind of Snoke's Royal Guard. And part of the conversation this week has been that they're going to see some action. And I wonder if they're going to see action when Kylo attacks Snoke. If Kylo goes after Snoke to kill him, will he end up facing off against these guys first?
Nah, that's Luke's gig.
Yeah, that would be good as well, wouldn't it? See Luke go up against them. But I don't think we're going to see much lightsaber action from Luke. So there'll probably be a lot of force choky thing and perhaps these guys being thrown around.
And some force crushy throat.
Force crushy throat.
I'm not sure.
You think we'll see the blade?
Mark Hamill likes to go for it a bit. I think he's going to say, you know, am I going to have a bit of swordplay? Yeah, he's still got energy. You can see it. He radiates it. And I think he'd be encouraging to Rian Johnson to say, you know, I'm going to get a bit of swordplay, right?
Mm.
So I'd be quite interested.
I would like to see it myself. But you know what he's just said about, I absolutely disagree with everything Ryan's chosen to do with the Luke character. Maybe that's it. Oh, I want the lightsaber. And he's like, nope, no lightsaber for you. You're too powerful. I mean, look, really, if you look at that image in show chat, it's the Praetorian Guard with the visor up, right, to fight.
And yeah, it looks like it.
The image we've got in the show notes, which is the illustration for makingstarwars.net, that's the visor down. Maybe all Luke needs to do is use the Force to close their visors so they can't see where they're going. And then they just get bored and frustrated and like wander off. You're not playing by the rules.
Oh, to hell with the whole thing.
Yeah. They're just like feeling around. They've got their hands out in front of
them. I can't see. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm on break.
Here's a lesson I learned when I was once on the Falcon with Ben. Ding. You can't. Now you can't see me. these look awesome. Some of these images. I'm going to try and find out where these images Adam got hold of, where they came from. I suspect they might be Topps trading cards or something.
Oh, okay.
Or they look very stylized to sort of go into a book. But there's a couple of character studies in there that look like they might be aiming for Topps trading card Last Jedi collection.
Yeah.
But they're great. There's a blueprint version of one of these heavy assault walkers, the First Order heavy assault walkers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Saw
one of those in my Lego set. They look pretty sweet.
Looks amazing.
Yeah, rather cool.
Add that into the show chat, actually. Save the downloads. It just looks blinding. This film's going to have a really interesting look about it. Let's get that in there.
Yeah, I said that last week. You showed those pictures last week.
Yeah.
There's a definite visual approach here that's not been done before.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it even looks a little bit out of whack compared to what we're used to. I'm very excited by the look that some of the images we were given last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And more than that, really, it's where are they going to be used? Like with these Praetorian guards, how are they going to be used? What are they going to be doing?
Well, the irony is they might not do anything but stand there.
Well, that was what happened with the cool Royal Guard.
They'll still be designed on many, many scenarios. That's just the way pre-production goes and so on, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, of course, yeah. And the only action I think the Royal Guard saw in the Return of the Jedi ended up on the cutting room floor, didn't it? Where they tried to stop Vader from entering the chamber where Palpatine was. And he just, like, force-choked them in there to... He flipped their visors down, basically. And they went,
crushy visor.
You ain't playing by the rules, Governor.
No.
Do me 11.
This ain't a fair fight or nothing.
That ain't in the book.
Leave it out, son. All right, let's move on to the Han Solo.
Darn, the old visor down trick.
That old chestnut, you mug.
You swine bag.
So Han Solo, A Star Wars Story, we got a look at there was a video online this week. I think that was at makingstarwars.net as well. Someone filmed from Forley Power Station of the little jet cars, the little hover cars, pod cars, bumper cars, swoop bikes, whatever we're calling them.
Yeah.
And they got a shot of a looked like a scout trooper, stormtrooper, on a bike.
Now, why does that look so familiar to me? It really does.
The thing he's riding.
It looks a bit like the
transport in episode 4. You know, the one that sort of they use in Yavin 4 to sort of ferry people about. It looks like a little version of them.
Yeah, it's also got obviously Ray is sitting on the back of a large sort of cuboid situation as well. But that really does look familiar to me. It's strange.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought as well, because it doesn't really look elegant or sleek.
No, it doesn't.
But then when they take the wheels away in post and this thing's just floating, it will look different again, won't it?
Yeah.
But it is very much sort of patterned after Ray's speeder, isn't it? That awkward front heavy, almost like a drag racer, front heavy.
Yeah.
And a rectangle on its side. Like all they did with Ray's speeder was flip Luke's up on its side, really, for the design.
Yeah.
But I do think this wheel, like Han's car last week when we saw that the wheels were photoshopped out, so it looked like it was floating, this will look different again when you take the wheels out.
Yeah.
I think it's going to look pretty awesome, but doesn't look like it handles very
well. To be honest,
it's
kind of cool in its ugliness. Got to be honest.
Clunky, yeah, it's really clunky.
Yeah, I like it.
This is something I'd seen a high-res image of a couple of weeks ago before the filming started, and it's really, from what I remember, it looks really shiny, and it has the Imperial Cog logo on it. You can just see it kind of, this is low-res because it's really zoomed in, but right behind the pilot is like a white patch about halfway down the back end of that bike. That's the Imperial Cog logo. And I was looking at it then thinking, I wonder what that is, because it looked almost like a bollard that you would put out to stop cars driving through. Yeah. And I thought, I wonder if that's what that was. But it did seem to have like the seat on it. And obviously we see this and it turns out to be a speeder bike of some kind.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's just all canon.
Mm.
That'd be really awesome.
That would be interesting.
Pretty cool design. I wonder if this stormtroopers more like police, you know, like they were on Tatooine. They didn't really seem like the army, they just seemed like peacekeepers, like a police force of some sort, like military police maybe.
Yeah.
Rather than actually being the Empire, they're not having run-ins with the Empire, they're just having run-ins with the local law enforcement.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, pretty good. I guess my seal of approval, right. Tandy Newton.
No, it's Tandy Thandy.
Tandy Thandy. Newton is pronounced Thandy. So Tandy Newton says the Han Solo movie is unlike anything she's done before. And she also implies that her role is somewhat substantial. Now, this comes from two different outlets, but I think it was the initial outlet was referencing the interview that she gave to Oprah Winfrey on a series from Variety called Actors on Actors.
So you get
two actors talking to each other.
Yeah.
In a really nice setting. It's a really good, it's a really well produced little spot that I was watching.
Mm.
And did you guys get a chance to watch the video?
No, I didn't have a chance.
No. I've just clicked on the link and I just like looking at her.
Yeah, she's very beautiful. It's it's really short, it's only about 6 minutes, I think. It's a really well produced little piece. And basically Oprah Winfrey asked, how did you stumble into this role in Star Wars? You know, how did Star Wars come into your life? And she said, she gave the story. She said, well, I've had a friend, my friend's a casting director and she's working on the new Star Wars movie, which is Han Solo. And we've known each other for 20 years and she's never once offered me a job until now. Yeah. And she said, look, this thing's come up on Star Wars and I really think you should go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd just finished up production on Westworld. She said she went off and got a tattoo done and she was in a really good place sort of mentally and she felt free, and then all of a sudden she said the heavens opened and this role dropped in her lap and it's Star Wars. And she said it's this huge production, this huge sort of this Disney production. Mm-hmm. And she said, even if this is what I mean by she implied the role was somewhat substantial, what she said was, I would have been happy even if it was just a small role and I was just on there for like a blip and then I'm gone. And the inference there is perhaps it's the opposite. That her role is substantial and somewhat more developed. Because she'd already referenced how She couldn't really go into details about why it was the case, but the role in this movie is unlike anything she's done before. It started making me think that she might be performance capture.
Yeah.
And what would you think of like a CGI alien villain, like a crime lord or something, portrayed by Tandy Newton?
No, like I say, I want to look at her.
Would it be that bad? They did it with Lupita Nyong'o, didn't they? And she is gorgeous. And they turned her into a tiny little short-sighted orange thing. So sometimes it's
I still would.
Well, she's into the Wookiee anyway, so you don't get a look in.
Or a Wookiee.
You don't get a Wookiee. Yeah, well played.
That's kind of cool. Bit of girl parents that coming in.
Would it be?
I mean, because Princess Leia was like the pinnacle of girl power, but elegant, indeed, and graceful, and slow, and so on with it, sort of thing. It'd be nice to have a bit more of a kick-ass character. I mean, I know we might have obviously Ahsoka sort of thing coming in, but I do like that idea.
Leia wasn't always that regal thing. She didn't mind getting her hands dirty. She grabbed that blaster and shot a hole in the wall straight away. She was
within minutes.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, got me there.
Yeah, she had a foot in both camps, didn't she, really? She could be one of the boys when she had to be.
Yeah.
And that was what I think was refreshing about her. But now I think you've got expectations when you see somebody like Tandy Newton, because she is a powerhouse actress. She's, I mean, if you've ever seen, all right, it's not the best film in the world, oh, the name's just escaped me. Crash. I love it. Yeah, I love it. But it's not lauded as a masterpiece by everybody. Yeah. But she is incredible in it. And what she manages to do with limited screen time in that movie is just phenomenal.
Yeah, she's wonderful riveting, in that film.
Absolutely riveting.
You don't go after a Tandy Newton for your movie unless you're going to really use those acting chops to your advantage.
Make use of her power, yeah.
Absolutely, but there are also expectations there to be subverted, aren't there? When you get somebody as beautiful as Tandy Newton, you think, oh, we'll put her in like the princess gown and we'll give her this an unusual but beautiful haircut. Maybe she'll be regal. I like the idea that she might in fact be more like this, an alien pirate or something.
Yeah.
And she gets to sort of do what Lupita Nyong'o did with Maz, which is perform that character from the inside out. And the fact that they're supermodel beautiful has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's,
I was just having a look to see if she's ever been nominated for an Academy Award. But she's been nominated for a ton of awards, but not an Academy Award.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's won BAFTAs, nominated for Golden Globe. She's won loads and loads of awards generally. Just not an Academy Award.
Did you see she won
the Screen Actors Guild nomination and a win for Crash.
Oh, she did?
She won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Crash, yeah.
Good, yeah. Well, she was a standout in that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for sure.
Everybody delivered to a higher standard in there.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first time I ever saw Michael Peña, I think, in that movie. And
oh, man, that scene kills me.
Oh, every time. That silent scream. If you haven't watched Crash...
I downloaded the soundtrack to Crash, and I actually knew the very, very moment the cloak scene was obviously playing. I actually nearly burst into tears on the train.
Yeah.
Listening to it, yeah.
Stunning stuff. I'm going to have to watch that film again very, very soon, I think. Yeah, so Tandy Newton, possible CGI character, but at least what I'm drawing from that interview.
It looks like Tandy Newton.
An exercise in futility. Just Tandy Newton, but twice as big. Yeah, that would be good. Twice as tall.
Yeah, and really like an avatar, though.
Yeah.
Tall Tandy. Yeah. That could be the figure. Okay, awesome. I think that's it. I think that's the last of the stories we got this week. Oh, no, we got. There was one thing that came out about episode 9 this week. Colin Trevorrow.
Oh, yeah.
He was saying he felt that Lucasfilm were limiting themselves intentionally on how to address the problem that is the lack of Carrie Fisher. I'm reading between the lines of Colin's statement.
Yeah.
He said, you know, we're limiting ourselves, limiting our own options or what we're going to do, implying that they could CGI, they could use cut footage, but they've decided not to. They've decided to write themselves out of it. But he did say, and what I drew most comfort from, is that they will find a way to... In fact, let me... It's on Talk Star Wars. Let me just call it up so I can actually quote the man himself, because I don't want to do it a disservice, because I really thought that it was well managed. What he said was well handled.
Yeah.
I think we might have less to fear than we initially thought. Okay. So, Colin Trevorrow on episode 9. This is what he, this was his final statement. I can guarantee it will be handled with love and respect and all the soul that Carrie Fisher deserves. Now that, to me, I find reassuring.
Yeah.
He earlier said, she was a major character, that's not a secret. And it was extremely sad for all of us, mostly just because she was so loved by the Star Wars family and everyone that worked with her. I feel like our options are limited, mostly by ourselves, in that there are only certain things that we are willing to do. Now, this does not sound to me like people trapped in a corner. It sounds like people that have that are making measured decisions.
Yeah. It seems like almost some people who've had a chance to actually jot a few ideas down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. They've had 6 months, right?
Yeah, for sure.
To sort of to table, and I'm sure there are plenty of options where I said, but let's throw every potential solution out now.
Yeah.
And then we'll just start taking away what doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure part of that mechanic would be to get Todd Fisher and Billy Lord in and say, if we wanted to pursue these solutions, like a fully CGI Carrie, or if we wanted to pursue this solution of using unused footage from the previous movies, is that okay? And if they said, yeah, go for it. I said, right, thank you. At least we now know that that's an option we can table. And then almost immediately say, no, we're not doing either of those things. But they needed to know that there were options before they could even explore them, right?
Yeah.
Because the Fishers could have easily have said no.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. They could be difficult about this stuff, but I don't get the feeling they would be.
No.
Because they know how important Carrie was, ultimately. And they know also that they'll... You know, Lou. I mean, I don't think Billy would anyway, but I think Todd even would also know that there's a lot of people who love the role she played, and as a result, would be very kind of disappointed and almost resentful of any attempts to restrict that.
Yes, and vociferously so too.
Yeah,
we do not go quietly into umbrage, do we, the fandom?
Right,
but I wonder if. I don't suppose there was ever an option for them to say no. And like you say, they know how important the character of Leia was, and to nobody less than Carrie. Leia was extremely important to Carrie Fisher. Leia was extremely important to Carrie Fisher, wasn't she? The character. So
yeah, for sure.
Not just... in terms of legacy, but she loved the character, so you know, they would have needed to support that, because that would have been a thing that was important to Carrie Fisher. So
for sure,
whatever it is they do, to me now it seems like the biggest cloud. I'm not that fearful of it, but it seems like the biggest issue they've got right now is how to navigate this issue.
I think they would have thought very, very, very long and carefully about it.
They will do. I don't know if they have yet, just because, like I say, there's no story for episode 9 yet. But I'm sure they'll have started. That's come out, that's been confirmed. Kathleen said it somewhere.
I'm sure there's probably notes.
Yeah, there's probably notes, like some vague sort of outlines.
Comic-Con,
yellow post-it notes scattered around.
So that's all it is at the moment. She said at Comic-Con, which was April, that because Todd had come out and said,
you're going to do a read through, right?
Pardon?
In the next, here we go, I've got it here. The cast is gathering soon to do episode 9 table read.
Mm-hmm.
And that was end of April, so maybe there's something now.
And in April, she had said that they had gone back to the drawing board, didn't she?
Yeah.
And they'd started over, and that Carrie wouldn't be in episode 9.
Yeah.
I don't remember her saying Leia wouldn't be in episode 9. Well, she definitely said Carrie wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And, these are all semantics at the end of the day. We get lost in this stuff. We go round and round in circles. But it's just like I heard Kyle talking about it over on Tumbling Saber. It's just the biggest thing at the moment. It's so confusing to hear people say, nothing's changed about The Last Jedi, but there's no Carrie Fisher in episode 9. Well, how do those two things reconcile themselves? Mm-hmm. Maybe Leia makes her exit in 8, and that was always the way.
Yeah.
And she was always intended to come back in some supernatural form in episode 9.
Or at all.
Or maybe not at all. Well, see, this is the thing that I keep... This causes me so much distress. I don't tell you how much sleep I lose to these sorts of things, but go round and round in circles. At Celebration last year, Carrie said, we've wrapped Last Jedi, we're about to start on the next one. She didn't say Last Jedi, but, you know, we've just wrapped one, we're about to start another one. So Carrie was clearly involved. And Colin Trevorrow, even in the article that I'm looking at now on Talk Star Wars, he said she was a big part of episode 9. She was a big part.
How can she be about to start the other one when there's no story?
Well, that would have been back in Celebration last year. That would have been pre-production, so it would have been starting on the character designs and wardrobe and things like that. And so that would have been...
Again, but how can you start pre-production when there's no story?
Training, location scouting, all of that stuff, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
No, that still doesn't answer my question.
It does.
No, if you have no story... No, I totally like the answer. Seriously, if you have no story,
you don't have to have no locations. You don't have to have a fully finished script to start locations.
Idea of story is different to mine.
Oh yeah, no. They can't start production because there's nothing to shoot. But you can start pre-production when you think you've got to get the actors training. You've got to get schedule squared away where you can go to agents and say you need to be free these blocks of time, so they can start putting a production schedule together. Well, we know we've got Carrie and Mark on these dates, so they'll be free to be in London this period of the year. But then they're going to have to go to Dubrovnik to shoot this period of the year. So pre-production is all of that boring stuff. And then there's the story.
You're talking finalizing a story.
What they threw out. Based on what Kathleen was saying at Comic-Con, at Celebration, what they threw out was what they'd been working on since January, which was the script. Or what they'd been due to start, I guess, in January, which was the story outline or whatever. None of that was done by Rian Johnson, so it was all being started from scratch. And then in January, they had to jettison that stuff, go back to page one, and rework it without Carrie's involvement. That would have been what they, that's what they need to start production, which is now going to start in January, as far as I understand it.
Who's directing? I've forgotten.
Colin Trevorrow.
Trevorrow, of course it is. Sorry.
Trevorrow's from Safety Not Guaranteed and Jurassic World fame.
Yes.
Jurassic World was easy on the eye.
Yeah, it was kind of, it's that thing, wasn't it? That mega budget blockbuster.
Yeah, followed a theme more than adequately, to be honest.
Was a soft reboot. But it's these other things. It's Safety Not Guaranteed that I think is, if you want to see what attracted Lucasfilm to him, it's that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the business management side of Jurassic World is a box ticked for Lucasfilm. You can handle a $200 million budget. It's like running a small country. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You're ready to bring the sensibilities that produced your indie movie to the big screen. And that, I think, is what a lot of people are missing. Yeah. They just think, they want him to remake Jurassic Park as Star Wars. And with Ryan, it might have been, well, they saw Looper and they want that. No, what they want is they want people that can handle character and story, but they also want somebody that can do...
They've handled the sets.
That can handle a business, like a $200 million business at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's why you get Gareth Edwards, who shows he can do what he can do in Monster, but he shows a $200 million project with Godzilla. Mm-hmm. It's not about making a Godzilla-like movie for Star Wars. It's about making that character movie with the Godzilla budget.
Mm. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
You know, it's all there are a lot of wheels turning in the background of these things, and too often people want to break it right down to its core, and they just say, no, but he made Jurassic World, and that's why they want him, and Jurassic World sucked. Well, for a start, it didn't really suck. It didn't set the world alight, but Safety Not Guaranteed did. And if you haven't seen it, go and watch it, because you'll see some of the character nuances that you can expect to see in Episode 9. That's interesting. That's mouth-watering.
Cool.
But, yeah, the biggest problem at the moment is how you handle this carry thing. There's a lot of loose ends. There's a lot of stuff. Crosstalk that doesn't make any sense. Like, 8's not being altered. 9 was supposed to be carry-heavy. Now it's carry with no sign of carry whatsoever. How does any of that reconcile itself? I don't know.
You'll find out before you know it.
Well, true.
Yes. Until then, no sleep. No sleep for us.
Yeah, no sleep.
Yeah. All right. That's us done. Guys, you got anything you want to throw at the nice ladies and gentlemen before we wrap up?
No, good.
No, not at all.
Cool in the gang. Right. Thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars again this week. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review in iTunes and take advantage of our Ron Burgundy guarantee. Whatever you write in a 5-star review, we all read as long as it's clean. So if you want to promote something like a blog or a podcast, that is the place to do it. You can also email us your questions and comments at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. That's talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can reach out to us on one of the many social channels, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and more. And with that said, gents, where can people find you between shows?
You can find me on moviescorenews.com, which has been asleep for a while. I apologise, but it woke up very much yesterday. So you'll also find me on Twitter at moviescorenews, and you'll find me on Facebook at moviescorenews, and you'll find me as @Paul on talkstarwars.co.uk.
Wonderful.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @RobWadeVision, and I can be found also on emotionally14.com and on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, YouTube, emotionally14.
Everywhere. You can find Stephen at Stephen_Ware on Twitter and Wild About Nature on YouTube. I suggest checking out his channel. There's some really cool bits and pieces on there, especially if you like wildlife the way he does. And he enjoys it naked most of the time. Creepy.
For such an uncouth creature, he's a very beautiful man, isn't he?
He is, rather. And he's extremely knowledgeable. And when he starts talking on his videos, there's so much passion with that knowledge as well. Yeah. It's captivating.
He's a god. He's all right.
He's a good egg. You'll find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at @TalkStarWars. Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and check out some of the other great podcasts that exist over there. Everybody's doing the Lord's work. Some really cool content being put out by those fine ladies and gentlemen. And you can find quite a few of them doing good stuff on talkstarwars.co.uk as well. Mark Airy's working very hard at the Toy Box and the Toy Run. Tim is writing some quality content now about collectibles over there. And Mr. Robert Cast is doing good stuff on the comic books and also the Roundtable. So don't forget, every month he produces a show called the TSW Roundtable. If you want to join Rob there with a couple of hosts from around the Commonwealth just to talk Star Wars, then fire him an email at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com and put TSW Roundtable in the subject line, and that will get straight to him. Okay, that's us done. All right, we will speak to you guys next week. Have a good one.
Take special care.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at StarWarsCommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
and The Nerd Room Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world. Nee, 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 nee
It's a wrap.
Let's talk about Loot Crate. Are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 per month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new and exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or a loved one. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/talkstarwars and enter the code TALKSTARWARS to save $3 off your new subscription today.